Welcome and thank you for joining us for another episode of KPMG's Inside International Tax, a podcast devoted to recent developments, observations, and trends related to U.S. international tax. I'm one of your hosts, Gary Scanlon, a principal in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. I'm joined by my co-host, Kristen Gamboa, a managing director in the same group. Hey, Kristen.
Hey, Gary.
Digital assets and digital technologies are rapidly transforming nearly every aspect of the value chain of nearly every company and nearly every industry. In today's episode, we will ask and hopefully answer what digital is and what it's not, and what it can mean for companies in any industry, including those that wouldn't traditionally view themselves as tech companies. For our discussion today, we're joined by Paul Glunt and Matt McNeil, both principals in KPMG's International Tax Value Chain Management Practice. Welcome to the show, Paul and Matt.
Hi, Gary.
Good to be with you, Gary.
For today's episode, our goal is really to develop a baseline understanding of the types of digital technologies that exist and how they're being used to create value within organizations, all looking at that through a tax and transfer pricing lens. Before we dive in, Matt, could you provide those of us who aren't familiar with digital transformation and value chain management, or VCM as we call it, some background on why this is becoming important to corporations?
Yeah, absolutely, Kristen. Thanks for that. I think maybe we should start at the start. What is the value chain and why is it important? In short, the value chain is a term to refer to the end-to-end range of activities a company engages in, from product or service development to raw material sourcing, all the way through production and ultimately distribution. And this really has become an important concept in tax and transfer pricing analysis, as it's a way to conceptualize the various functions and activities that contribute to value creation within an organization, and therefore profit generation, which we're always certainly focused on.
So what are you generally seeing in this space today?
Where we're spending a lot of time today is actually with what we refer to as the digital value chain. And the digital value chain is a similar framework for looking at the ways in which digital technology is both created and exploited and utilized across businesses and how that contributes to value creation and profit generation overall. And in this regard, we've seen a number of trends. The first one I would point to is what I would call the increasing pace of change across the economy. I'm reminded of a book from maybe a decade or so ago called The Second Machine Age that was written by a couple of MIT professors that spoke about how we were really at that time on the precipice of a new revolution in digital technology and the ways that that would transform the economy overall. And certainly, not only do we have an increasing rate of change in the economy in terms of the deployment of digital technology, but the pace of change of the pace of change is in fact increasing as well. And that was a major point that they made at the time. And I think we're certainly seeing that play out across the economy today. One of the areas where this is playing out, certainly in our practice and in the way that we're working with companies, is the way that we're seeing digital technology rapidly deployed in traditionally non-tech industries. In addition, if you look at the rapid rise of the development and deployment of AI technology, I mean, it was only 12, 18 months ago that we were talking about this conceptually. And we look across the economy today, and there are a number of industries that have already deployed AI technology and are generating valuable business insights from that. It's just been incredible to see the speed at which digital technology is changing businesses and, of course, therefore changing the means by which they create value and generate profit as organizations.
Why should our clients care about all of this?
So, Kristen, as background, all of this might be sort of interesting, but I imagine our tax-focused audience here is wondering, so what? And the so what with all this change that we're seeing associated with digital technology is that with these new sources of value and these new value drivers within organizations, we are seeing and able to identify new intellectual property assets that we can do tax planning around. In the VCM practice, we're often acting like treasure hunters, trying to uncover these highly valuable assets within organizations. For example, I think about the client we worked with recently that told us digital technology played no significant role in their business as a consumer goods company. However, through the process of value chain mapping, we're able to identify software and data assets with multi-billion dollar valuations. We also uncovered an initiative within their IT organization to restructure their global footprint, which dovetailed exactly with some of the hub planning that we can do for these types of assets.
Thanks, Matt. That's really helpful context. Paul, what trends are you seeing in the economy with the deployment of digital technology?
Thanks, Kristen. First off, I want to make the comment that digital is everywhere. And when we say digital, we use that term to encompass a lot of different things, all of which are tied into software and data, but much of which is kind of its own unique sort of animal. Software is what we think of first, right? We all have a fairly good sense of customer-facing or so-called front office instances of software, even where we see this beyond software companies. We're already seeing companies that sell physical products that are now selling software. Often it's embedded in a product. For example, you could have a medical device or a communications device that really is embedded software and allows the company to deliver something beyond the physical product. We're seeing digital facilitate new sorts of business models. For example, a company that in the past might have sold HVAC hardware may now bundle together its own HVAC hardware with hardware and accessories from other companies and software technology and data capabilities, and now they deliver HVAC as a service. That client has just converted itself from a hardware company to a services company, which increases its revenue because its customers really want to have OPEX solutions rather than CAPEX solutions. That's a game changer for companies. A lot of the value we see is kind of software that's hidden inside a tangible good. Whether it's the software that tells my insulin pump when and how much insulin to inject, to the smartwatch that alerts me that, hey, I've been sitting all day, it's time to get up and take a walk, or my refrigerator, which using sensors and telematics is able to tell me that it's time to replace my milk, or is able to send me an email offering up recipes based on what I actually have sitting in my fridge today. The metal and the plastic in those devices drives value, but it's software that really makes these products worth what companies are able to sell them for. Increasingly, we're also seeing a big change from a digital perspective, not in what goes into the goods, but how those goods are sold, both directly to consumers, but also in the B2B context, as we're seeing e-commerce platforms in the business-to-business space start to mirror the deep and robust sorts of interactions you get when you're at home on Saturday buying something from Amazon. Some of the most important software, surprisingly, is actually, you know, even more hidden than that. It's really the software that goes on behind the scenes in the back in the middle office of companies. Internal use software drives operational effectiveness and savings across your entire business. When you think about how companies engage in what we think of as kind of back office functions, demand planning, inventory management, transportation management, how we manage our interactions for maintaining our factory floor assets, we use predictive maintenance. More and more, these are driven by digital and data, and that's driving value and savings within the company.
So it sounds like this is all about software engineers making a bunch of software or building in-house fancy data analytics tools. Is that right?
Yes and no. Certainly, proprietary technologies and algorithms are often a way to create a competitive advantage. However, we also see that companies are able to create significant value using third-party off-the-shelf technology. How do they do that? Well, it's because of their own data. In most cases, companies create value through digital as a result of the combination of software and the data that runs through it. Sometimes there's more value in the data, and sometimes there's more value in the software. Each situation's unique. And when we think about data, the value doesn't come from just the data itself. The data itself can be valuable. Often it is. However, many of the functions that are related to the data, that ecosystem that's really around data and the extraction of data and the exploitation of that data, what we refer to as the data value stack, well, each component of activity to take data from raw data to a refined product or an insight, each of the steps along the way there, they have value. They contribute to value creation. And from a tax perspective, many of these activities might be routine. However, many of them might be things that drive residual profit. Typically, things like data strategy, data management, and data exploitation are highly valuable and can attract significant profit from a transfer pricing perspective. As computing power has grown, companies are finally unlocking the power of big data. Certainly, you all probably remember over the past couple of decades, big data and the power of big data has been a buzzword and a talking point. But what we're really seeing today is companies now delivering on the promise of that technology. Cloud-enabled big data technology allows companies to acquire, store, manage, and analyze huge amounts of data, more data than ever before. And this has allowed them to unlock never-before-possible potential. Healthcare companies use big data to enhance individual patient outcomes with personalized medicine and predictive analytics. Big data and digital twins, a form of a computer simulation of a real-world model, were key to reducing the develop and testing period for the COVID-19 vaccine, for example. So, Kristen, while software is certainly at the heart of digital transformation and the technologies companies are deploying, it's not the full story. Data is often a very valuable asset that companies are exploiting, even though they are utilizing third-party software.
Thanks, Matt. So, Paul, what does this all mean to a tax practitioner?
Yeah, Gary, thanks for asking. You know, because a lot of things we've talked about, they sound really cool, but everybody who's listening is probably a tax practitioner. And so the question is, why do we care? Well, we care because digital and data are creating value in the organization. And from a tax perspective, value creation correlates with profit creation. And so as companies are becoming more digital, they're creating value within their organization. Very often that's not being planned for. So now profit is being earned maybe in company X where we thought it might have been earned in company Y. And so companies need to be thinking about digital and data both from a defensive perspective, but also from a proactive perspective. As value is created, at some point, it will be sufficiently important that the tax authorities will expect that you'll be pricing this into your transfer pricing. What we commonly see is as companies are evolving digitally, digital is worth a very small amount, and it basically gets embedded in some existing fee. Maybe there's a cost allocation, or there's an omnibus 1% management charge. And for a while, that tends to be fine. At some point, especially as digital starts to become an important value driver for the organization, where it starts to create competitive advantage for a company, all of a sudden, the value of digital needs to be priced separately. And depending on where digital is created, you may have to start putting in place new transfer pricing structure with new payments, new contracts. And you also need to start thinking about DEMPI. Do I have DEMPI in the right place if I create medical devices and historically I've had a Swiss structure that has very strong DEMPI sitting in my Swiss structure? Well, now that a significant component of the value of the IP in that product is driven by digital, do I have a problem if I have not a single DEMPI person related to the software in my Swiss structure, and what can I do about that? Moreover, it gets beyond mere transfer pricing, because for indirect taxes, for example, if you're delivering technology, there could be an indirect tax implication, whether it's VAT or a state sales and use tax perspective, that seems to be hidden and nobody's thinking about that you may need to consider. On the flip side, the good news is it's not all about playing defense. Digital IP is no different from other IP in the context that because it drives value, it's something that can deliver a benefit from a tax planning perspective.
So let's discuss a few examples of how companies are using tax planning in light of this digital value. Matt, what are some of the structuring options companies are proactively pursuing?
Thanks, Gary. I think where this always starts is with a value chain analysis. That's really the beginning of the process here, to identify the activities within your organization's particular value chain that create value. And then when it comes to digital technology, as we've talked about, really focusing in on what are the digital assets that your organization is creating. And again, that might be software, that might be data, it might be linked to AI, but it's the components that you're contributing that drive profit in the organization. And by starting with an analysis of that, mapping that out, you're able to identify which are the components within your value chain that are unique and, you know, relevant to various types of center of excellence or hub planning opportunities. If we think about what those opportunities are, let's start with a more plain vanilla one, a digital center of excellence.
A digital center of excellence is an operating model focused on the development and delivery of digital technology, either internally to affiliated companies or externally to third-party customers or users. The basic idea is the centralization of certain software development and deployment activities in a tax-favorable jurisdiction. That location might be offshore or perhaps within the U.S., depending on a company's particular revenue profile. In addition, that digital COE might be structured as an entity that produces and sells the software, or it could provide the software as a SaaS service provider. In structuring a digital COE, we apply three different lenses to our analysis in order to help a company implement a structure that meets business needs but is also tax efficient. In this respect, we typically first apply a tax technical lens. When doing this, we're considering what kind of activity would need to occur in a digital COE in order to satisfy U.S. and foreign tax law requirements to access reduced rates of income tax or local tax incentives, etc. For example, one client we worked with chose to locate their digital COE in Ireland, with software engineers and global software development leaders located in Ireland, while locating a large number of actual software developers, the quote, fingers on keys, as they're often referred to, in India. In this case, we worked with the company to ensure they qualified for the lower Irish income tax rates on trading income, that they qualified for Irish R&D incentives, and were able to satisfy U.S. Subpart F requirements that they be considered to be producing the software in Ireland pursuant to U.S. regulations and qualify such income as guilty. The second lens we apply is a DEMPI lens. It is one thing to have a structure that satisfies tax technical requirements, but then, of course, you need to ensure that from an economic perspective, profit is properly attributable to the activities occurring in the digital COE. As you can imagine and might expect, given the evolution of traditional tax planning over the past decade or so in light of BEPS 1.0, there can be a fair amount of overlap between the tax technical requirements and the DEMPI requirements. But it's important to separate this analysis, even where there might be overlap, the distinct requirements on the tax technical side and the DEMPI side might be unique. Finally, we apply an operational lens to what is being built to ensure what the company is building is not a Frankenstein, so to speak, with disparate parts thrown together, but in fact has the right capabilities and functionality to operate as a true center of excellence. So Gary, I spent a fair amount of time on this example here with the digital COE, but I did that because I think it really sets the foundation for how most of the planning we're doing for all different kinds of digital IP works. In many ways, the other examples are just variations on the same theme based on a company's specific digital assets and their place within the overall digital value chain.
Matt, that's helpful. Any other examples of digital IP planning you could share?
Well, another alternative structure we've helped companies implement is the data hub. We applied the same approach as with building out the DCOE, but we applied it to data assets. In one particular case, these assets were particular data insights being generated by the company. For the company in this example, they were using proprietary transactional data, as well as some raw data acquired from third parties, and performing analytics to develop these particular data insights, which were then being shared with the operating affiliates to make better informed business decisions. In this particular case, the company had a large revenue footprint outside of the US and the data and analytics talent in the US. And so we were able to work with them to set up a domestic data hub and drive a large FDI benefit as a result. Similarly, we've seen licensed technology models that have their own unique tax technical requirements, or SaaS models, which are increasingly common as cloud adoption grows.
So we need to wrap this episode up. Matt, Paul, do you have any parting words for us?
Certainly, Gary. If I had to identify one key takeaway from today's conversation, I would say that understanding the role of digital technology in your company's value chain is absolutely critical. There are significant tax savings available if you get this right, and you can expect significant transfer pricing pressure from tax authorities if this is overlooked. I also would note that we have only scratched the surface of the tax technical issues associated with planning for digital IP.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I think my parting words are largely going to echo some of the words that Gary started us out with. Digital is something that we're seeing at nearly every company across every industry. We're finding that more and more digital drives an important component of value within even some of the least interesting businesses. My parting word is that I think this is something that everybody needs to spend some time thinking about from a tax perspective. Not everybody has the fact pattern or the desire to do affirmative tax planning. Some people do, but at a bare minimum, just to understand how digital and data are impacting your transfer pricing and your overall tax profile is something I think that everybody should take time to look at.
Thanks, Paul and Matt, for joining us today to introduce us to digital transformation. As always, please stay tuned for future episodes of KPMG's Inside International Tax to stay up to speed on the latest developments in U.S. international tax. Until our next episode, take care.